This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. This is Love Sport Radio and I am Matt Beadle and this is the Brighton Fan Show. Joining me on the line is Josh Goldsmith, as always, from the Together podcast. But before we get to Josh, just a bit of breaking news in the Premier League. And that is that Leicester have trounced Southampton 9-0 at St Mary's on a sodden, windy evening on this Premier League Friday. That goes down as a joint record Premier League victory. Of course, Manchester United defeating Ipswich Town in the 94-95 season. The last time I can remember it happening before that, I think, was Liverpool beating Crystal Palace in the 89-90 season. Of course, that was before the Premier League. And for some reason, people don't seem to recognise records before the Premier League begun in 1992. But yes, Leicester have beaten Southampton 9-0 on their own patch in the Premier League with two hat-tricks, one from Ayoze Perries and the other from Jamie Vardy. That has happened just once before in the Premier League as well. Jermaine Pennant and Robert Pires scoring hat-tricks for Arsenal, coincidentally, against Southampton. So not a nice tag for the Saints to have, and I'm sure Ralf Hasenhüttl's job may just be on the line. A bad run of form for them. Ryan Bertrand sent off in that game as well. But moving on to the Brighton Fan Show. Joshua, thank you for joining us as always.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I just got checked into the end of that game there. And did you know that Southampton's next two fixtures are Manchester City and Manchester City?
There we go. Not looking good for Southampton then.
I wouldn't want to be them. And that's a real good example of how not to play with 10 men.
Isn't it just? I mean, to go down, I mean, interesting dismissal as well. VAR, Leicester actually scored from the foul and then they brought it back. And that's where VAR can come into good use, I suppose. But yeah, the captain gone. Just not a good afternoon. Well, a good evening for them, I suppose.
Yeah, about as bad as it gets, I think. Literally, it matched a record. So
yeah.
I can't think of a worse place to be than St Mary's, and it was pouring as well. So honestly, I probably would have gone home at halftime.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the fans did. Of course, if you go home at halftime, you don't see the full game, including injury time, which segues us nicely into last weekend, Joshua, and the fact that I think it was the 94th minute, was it, that Aston Villa just managed to scrape victory against Brighton. I mean, it's a week on. Are you over it now?
Yeah, I am. We actually conceded the first goal 2 minutes into injury time in the first half too, so there's a bit of a pattern going on there. It's obviously a mental thing perhaps, or just bad luck, but, you know, we played really well even down to 10 men, and the first 30 minutes before the sending off, we dominated the game. We looked like, honestly, without being too harsh on them, it looked like a Premier League team against the Championship side. We were that good in that first half an hour, and then the two yellow cards came along, which was totally avoidable by Moy. Really stupid stuff from him. And then the rest, as they say, is history. It went downhill from there.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, Aaron Moy in particular, I think actually since they came into the Prem, only Leicester and Everton have received more red cards than Brighton in that time. 8 red cards since coming up to the Premier League. But it was just, that's the type of red card as a manager, as a teammate, as a fan, you just cannot get your head around, can you? You just wonder what was going through his head with that.
Yeah, and I mean, you're kicking the ball away at like 27 minutes on the clock. What on earth is making you think that's an okay thing to do? And it's funny because of all the people, Aaron Moy, here's a stat I'm not sure if you're aware of, that was his first ever red card in his professional playing career. So, like, where did that come from? I have no idea.
Sometimes you just wonder whether players got out the wrong side of the bed. Sometimes you just wonder whether they fancy it. Like, I don't know whether sometimes players just think, oh, do you know what? I'll get a bit of attention for getting a red card. I'm not saying that's what Aaron Moy is doing, of course. But I don't know. Sometimes they just have a rush of blood to the head. But not only did it put Brighton down to 10 men, it also, I guess, in a way, freed up Jack Grealish, who then was pivotal in the rest of the game, of course, scoring in successive Premier League games and then having a hand in the goal that Matt Target scored the winner. So he really has let his teammates down there.
Yeah, big time. And, you know, before he got sent off, I'm sure that anybody watching it, and including Villa fans, all said, you know, that they thought they were in for a long afternoon, and we looked like we were going to be pretty comfortable all the way through. And that happened, and, you know, we actually didn't look that bad even with 10 men, similar to when we played Southampton at home and it happened. But, you know, when you have somebody like Jack Grealish on the other side who loves playing in those sort of conditions, especially at home, and is really kind of thriving being the man at Villa, it was just going to be one way. And as soon as they got that corner in like the 94th minute, I knew it was happening. It was such a Brighton thing to do.
That's one of those things only fans know as well, isn't it? I guess if we look at positive bright sparks from the game, yes, Graham Porter spoke after the game, said, you know, absolutely gutted, but he praised Brighton's players, because you did go to Villa and actually, like you said, you were the better team.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it was just a moment of two moments of madness from Moy. But the team played excellently. They didn't move away from their ethos. They knew how they wanted to play. They were confident in the way they played. And like I said, if he hadn't got himself sent off, I think it was a comfortable 3 points. I feel like I'm saying the same things as I said when we played Southampton, which just makes it all the more frustrating, because that's 4 to 6 points we've dropped. Against teams that we really shouldn't be dropping them against, considering Southampton just got tanked 9-0 at home.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And another positive note, I suppose, Pascal Gross, another assist for Adam Webster's first goal for the club as well. And interestingly on Gross, especially with the game coming up this weekend, that's 69 chances from set pieces that he's created since Brighton came into the Premier League. That's a joint high in that time with Everton's Gylfi Sigurdsson.
Doesn't shock me. It's a lot of his stats since he came into the Premier League have mirrored Gylfi. So, you know, if at any point in time he gets a little bit past it and ends up going to somewhere above us for 50-odd million, I'll take it any day of the week.
Yeah. And in terms of team selection, Josh, I mean, we know that Graham Potter, sometimes you like to say you trust the process and what he's doing is right, and I imagine you have full faith in him. A bit of a question mark over the fact that Alzate, who is highly rated and we've spoken of him a lot on this show, didn't start the game. Of course, it started 3 straight Premier League games prior to that, but came on for the last 10 minutes, did impress again. Aaron Connolly, on the other hand, was taken off. I think that, you know, Potter's come out and said, you know, I'm just managing them correctly. They're both young lads. That's fair enough, right?
Yeah, I think it is fair enough. And I think that Connolly may be taken into account this weekend too. I would be surprised to actually see him start this weekend for the same reasons that Potter just stated with Alzate. Proper is, you know, a very senior member of the squad. He is also probably our best midfielder as well. So if he's fit and ready to go, it would kind of be silly not to start him. And I think that with Trossard now back and fit, and he's now had 2 weeks full training, I would be surprised to not see him start tomorrow in place of Connolly for the same reason. And Alzate may well take Moy's spot, which kind of makes a nice rotation for Potter.
Almost conveniently so, I suppose.
Yeah,
sometimes,
right?
Yeah, right. It's amazing how that tends to work out. On the flip side, Josh, don't want to bring the mood down at all, but the stat that's sort of come out this week is the fact that that's 15 Premier League games now in 2019, more than any other Premier League team this calendar year. Are you slightly concerned about that? Does that bother you? It's just two wins in the Premier League this season?
No. Because with the calendar year stuff, it's just so different because we've had such a change in manager over the summer. But the two wins so far, like it's more frustrating than it is worrying, because there are so many more points we could have had, and there's a lot of things on there like the XG stats and whatever else you want to take a look at now with the new fancy dancy sciences they're bringing out to show how many goals you should have scored and where you should be in. You know, if we would have taken those stats to heart, we would be up there with Leicester right now. And that's really just the bottom line. We don't have quality that those top teams have. So it's frustrating to see us play ourselves into the positions and not quite finish the chances we have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, there is a chance to right that wrong, of course, with Everton coming up at the weekend. Gavin Butland, Everton's official statistician, will be talking us through that.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
This is the Brighton Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with Josh Goldsmith of the Together podcast. And now I'm delighted to say that we are joined by Martin Buckland, Everton's statistician. Gavin Buckland, sorry, I should say, not Martin Buckland. I apologise, Gavin. Gavin Buckland, of course, coming. That's a terrible start, isn't it? Well, I'll tell you what, we'll go straight into a good memory for Everton, because I believe it has been 36 odd years since Everton last won at Brighton. Now, it's fair to say there's been two games in that time. So it's funny how these sort of stats work out. But a memorable occasion. Of course, Brighton, sorry, Josh, went down that season. They did, of course, get to the FA Cup final. But that was quite a pivotal game in their survival, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was Brighton's penultimate home game of the season. And, of course, they managed by Jimmy Merrier. They was from Liverpool. He used to play for Liverpool, Jimmy Merrier. And I think it was the day of the Grand Master. We were winning 1-0. Kevin Sheedy scored. 2 minutes from the end, Clive Thomas, the referee, was notorious for Everton supporters for disallowing a goal against Liverpool in an FA Cup semi-final a few years before. He awarded Brighton the penalty, which the Everton goalkeeper, Jim Arnold, saved. This is like going into like sort of the last minute. And Clive, being Clive, in front of the TV cameras, decided that the goalkeeper had died too early and ordered the retake. Brighton equalised, thought, you know, a couple of minutes left, we'll go for the winner. And then about a minute or two into injury time, Gordon Smith, famous for the 83 Cup final, scored what people thought was the winning goal, but Clive, being Clive, decided to disallow it. And virtually the last play of the game, from the free kick, from the foul, that's what Clive had seen. Everett went up the other end, and Kevin Sheedy scored the winner. And put, you know, it sort of what sent Brighton down, really. And we've not won there since. So there's only been two games down at the on the south coast, and Everton been dreadful in both games. I think we got beat 1-0 last year, didn't we? It was 1-0 the year before. Wayne Rooney scored the last minute penalty, I think, something like that.
It is staggering to think of that, Gavin, because obviously that was the Goldstone Ground a long, long time ago. The book, Clive Thomas, of course, as he kind of became known. I think it was a 1978 World Cup, wasn't it, when he disallowed Zico's goal right at the death.
He did, yeah.
When he blew his... I mean, he was just tended to be one of those refs, a bit like Mike Dean these days, who sort of courts controversy and gets the attention, I suppose, and maybe through no fault of his own. I think what was really interesting as well about that penalty was that it had been 51 games, I think, that Brighton had not been awarded a penalty. And all of a sudden, they had two in the space of a minute. The whole game as well, brilliantly narrated by Barry Davies at the time. Like
you
said, it was...
Well, you know what? I watched it when I found out it was coming on tonight. I watched the highlights again last night on YouTube. And I thought, if you're going to get one commentator to commentate on such a farcical end to a game, you've got to have Barry Davies doing it, haven't you, you know?
Absolutely.
And he was brilliant. I think if he says something along the lines of, I've lost count how many Everton players have been booked there over the protest, because those are days when they had no red or yellow cards. They'd stopped them a couple of years before temporarily, and the players could be booked and nobody knew.
No, absolutely.
And I think Clive booked about, booked about six or seven Everton players in the melee following the Gordon Smith penalty, but it was a memorable game. I remember it very well. And Brighton, unfortunately, he'd done us a favour that season. It's knocked Liverpool out of the FA Cup at Anfield. And, of course, the following year, they repeated it again, didn't they, at the Goldstone Ground. And we went on to win the Cup that year in 84. So happy memories of Brighton 83-84.
Absolutely. Well, bringing it forward to the current day, like you said, two games in the Premier League, a 1-1 draw in the 17-18 season. Like you said, Wayne Rooney getting a last gasp equaliser there. But Jurgen Locadia, Josh, with the solitary goal last season. How are you viewing the game this weekend, Josh?
It's a good opportunity to right the wrongs of last week, I think. Hopefully we don't have anything that a repeat from 1983, that's for sure. That would be a bad omen.
And Gavin, Everton bounced back last week after Marcus was under a bit of pressure, it seemed like. But what's the view now? Are spirits raised somewhat? Oh, I think we've lost Gavin. Gavin has gone. Yes, he has gone. We will move back to Josh. Josh, just with regards to Everton and that upturn in fortunes, of course, they are not on great form at the moment, but they haven't won, like we said, since 1983. Do you think sometimes that plays into their mind, or do you think that after that bounce back last week, they'll be on top form?
It's funny you say that, because it is strange, isn't it, that this was 30 years ago, and obviously there's not a single one of those players then playing now, and the same players that have played the last couple of years, there's a lot of them have moved on, and yet I think it does settle into the psyche a little bit that teams haven't won in so long. So I think there is something to do with that, but I think it's going to be tougher than it usually would be, simply because they did play so well against West Ham, although West Ham were abominable. But I do think that we're going to have to come out and perform, and I think that we will do that. It's just a case of stifling that kind of Gylfi Sigurdsson, their fullbacks are obviously very impressive too, so it's going to be a case of fighting fire with fire and see which one comes out on top this weekend, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting as well, those stats on Pascal Gross, of course, being pretty much a demon from set pieces, especially providing from set pieces. Everton have conceded a league high 7 goals from set pieces this season, so that's a good omen. Also, Marco Silva has lost twice to Brighton, once with Watford and once with Everton as well. He could become the first manager to lose 3 Premier League games against Brighton. So, you know, some potentially positive omens going into the weekend.
Yeah, for sure. And Everton are a team that like to attack. They like to have the ball. I think they're averaging something like 58% possession every game that they play, like on average over the first 9 games. And it's something that we like to do too. So if we can take charge early on and keep hold of the ball, I'm hoping that we can totally throw them off their game somewhat and allow us to kind of impose ourselves and our style and take that win from them.
I believe Gavin's back with us. Gavin, just a quick one. Everton, their last 6 wins in the Premier League have all come at Goodison Park. So away form isn't brilliant. They did win, of course, against West Ham last week. The pressure has been released from Marco Silva just temporarily. What can we expect this weekend?
I think more of the same as from West Ham. Saying that, I think Brighton this year, they like to keep the ball. I think it'll be an open game tomorrow, and I think we'll probably injuries permit, and I don't know what the position is with Yerimina at the moment. I expect us to field a similar, if not the same team as last week, playing in a similar manner, to be fair.
In terms of the season that Everton have had, of course, 15th at the moment, Brighton just 1 place and 1 point below in 16th. Are you surprised by Everton's start to the season? Obviously, we kind of get this, I don't know, it always feels like there's a real wave of optimism around Goodison Park at the start of every season, especially over the course of the past 3 or 4 seasons when a lot of money has been spent. What's the feeling at the moment?
Frustration. The reason what you just said, a lot of money is being spent. I think it's over £400 million. And the expectations of supporters are that if that's the amount that's being spent, then we should be challenging, dare I say, for the top 6. That's not happened. I think the frustrations would be for the manager that I think he wanted the centre forward in the summer and never got one. He wanted another centre half in and he didn't get one. And we're still, in strange ways, we're still rectifying the transfer sort of mismanagement of the first couple of summers of, you know, since Mascheri took over in 2016.
If he doesn't get a result against Brighton, because I guess we have to be brutally honest, is that those are the sorts of games that a top 6 club, we could say top 7 club, whatever. Yeah. I mean, it's very muddled now in terms of what that top 6 is, especially after the result today with Leicester and Southampton. But if he wasn't to get a result this weekend, is it seriously on him now, the pressure, Marco Silva?
I think he's under pressure. Whatever happens, even if he does get a result, I mean, there were stories, nothing about, I don't know whether you're privy to them, before last I had 3 games to save his job. I don't think a defeat tomorrow will be the end of the world. I suspect the key game will be against Watford in the Carabao Cup on Tuesday. And then we play Spurs at home the following Sunday. So
I don't think, as I say, it will be the end tomorrow if they get beat, but I won't be doing them any favours if something goes wrong in the next couple of games.
Lovely stuff. Gavin, thank you so much for coming on the line this evening. Just a quick score prediction before you go.
Well, if you want a confident stat, if you're a Brighton supporter, is we haven't won any of our last 10 games on the South Coast.
There we go.
Going back for 4 years. So we Southampton, Bournemouth or Brighton. So I'm duty bound to say 1-1. And I like Brighton. I think we've done really well this year. And I think that would be a hard-earned point because I think they're a team that plays good football, I'd like to see. And I think it'll be a really tough but entertaining game tomorrow.
Excellent. Gavin Buckland, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
That one's Everton's official statistician there, Gavin Buckland. Josh, before we go, he said he likes Brighton, so that was nice. He's saying 1-1. What are you saying for the result?
Well, it's always nice to... It is nice to hear so many people saying so many nice things about us.
Absolutely.
Because, towards the end of last season, they weren't very kind.
No, indeed.
But I think we're going to win. I think it's the perfect kind of storm right now. Everton have bounced back. They're going to be coming down buoyed with confidence, and we're going to have something to prove. And I think we're going to win quite comfortably, actually. I think it might be 2-0 or 3-0.
Ooh, confidence from Josh Goldsmith there of the Together podcast. Thank you for joining us, Josh. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
This has been the Brighton Fan Show. They host Everton tomorrow at 3 p.m. in the Premier League. We'll be back next Friday at 10 p.m. to look ahead to their next Premier League clash at home to Norwich.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.